This is a guy we've counted on since really shortly after the fires. He is the head of the North Coast Builders Exchange. Keith Woods is on the line with us. Welcome back, Keith.
Thanks, Pat. How's the wacky world of radio?
The wacky world continues on, as it does every morning about 3 a.m. here at the KSRO studios. And speaking of wacky worlds, well, you're living in one, and so are the rest of us as we struggle toward recovery and rebuilding. And thing one has been since just about day one, Keith, getting enough construction workers to be able to rebuild our community. And what's the status of that part of the story?
You know, it's a roller coaster. There are days when I'm at work where I hear we've got plenty of workers that they can come in from outside the area. Other days I hear the shortage is still on. I'm going with the shortage is still on. Not at the moment, because as you know, there aren't that many homes. In fact, very few actually under construction.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like the construction community is waiting for that tsunami of permits being pulled and plans finished and people ready to go. At that point, will we have enough workers? And that point is still months away, but we're trying to gear up for it.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out the timing of this whole thing, because we understand that it's a process, especially when it comes to the actual rebuilding for somebody. And there has to be that, you know, that approval between insurance carrier and insurance customer in terms of what was lost and how much ought to be repaid for that process. I also have been surprised, though, that at this stage of the game, that so few permits have been actually approved by the County of Sonoma, even with the extra added efforts that have been made and the new permitting center that's open.
You know, surprise was going to be my word of the day for you, because I think a lot of people, including me, are surprised at how slow this seems to be moving. We had, as I'm sure you noted, the five-month anniversary of the fire was yesterday. 5 months, and I don't think anybody back in late October, November, even December, thought that we'd be into March and still wrapping up the debris removal and still having so many people unsure what they want to do. But, you know, building after a disaster like this, it's a series of dominoes that need to tip over. One can't move forward unless the other one tips it over.
Yeah.
Debris removal was the first one. Now insurance settlements are the second one. That's the point when people will decide, I'm going to go ahead and take the steps to rebuild, or, you know what, I'm just going to sell my property and figure out what else I'm going to do. Some of the people, as you know, have already made that decision. They've got their lots for sale. They've decided, I don't have the money, or I don't have the patience to rebuild. But it's been a long, slow process, and it's caught all of us in the industry off guard.
And I think when last we spoke, Keith, a couple of weeks ago, you said that, you know, your estimate, your guesstimate in terms of the number of people who may choose not to rebuild is right around 30%. Is that still true for you?
This is nothing but throw some educated guesses up against the wall.
Sure.
I still believe in at least that number. With every day that goes by, and as more people find out, it's going to cost me a great deal of money that I don't have to supplement whatever my insurance settlement is. That number probably will hold, and I won't be surprised if it's even higher. Now, all of that's going to be known in the next 3 to 4 months. I think that's when more people are forced to or decide to not rebuild. In which case, builders are telling me, or a number of them, we'll buy up the lots when they're fairly priced and build, you know, take our production models and build them on these lots.
Yeah.
And we'll pick up a whole new market, Pat, and that's if not the fire victims who ought to get first choice on everything, then it'll be the pent-up demand for housing that existed before the fires. So there won't be empty lots forever. They'll be purchased. They'll be built upon. It just could be newer, different owners that are in those houses.
Yeah, and we've talked a lot about this really from the get-go, too, Keith, about the changing of our community. communities as a result of this. And this is, I think, the biggest cog in that wheel in terms of the number of people who decide not to rebuild. And then, the builders buying up those lots, creating their own communities, and then having new people come in. So change is inevitable. There's no question about that. It also, the rebuilding efforts seem to be along two party lines, as far as I can tell. One is age of the fire victim. And it makes perfect sense to me that if you're 70 or 80 years old, you know, who wants to go through the headaches of actually going through the rebuilding process? And the other is cost of living. And so when the realization hits for a lot of people, even though they have the same jobs or predict the same economic futures for themselves, that the options are starting to look pretty good in terms of other places to live and their own cost of living there.
Very astute observation and summary, Pat. You're not just another pretty girl radio guy. You know, there's a real mind.
Thanks, Keith. I always appreciate that support.
You're right on target. I'm hearing up in Fountain Grove, down in Coffee Park, and let's not forget the other areas that suffered tragedy as well. But there are a lot of seniors that were in their dream home. Their dream home's gone, and they don't have the patience for a new dream. So they're probably going to sell a property, maybe have enough equity to go buy something else, and that's a fact. What else is going on is a lot of elderly are saying, we were younger when we built our two-story-plus home,
yeah,
garage down below. We're going to downsize to a single-story, smaller home. So there's going to be so much change ahead. It'll be years before we see the culmination of the change. But you're right. It's underway. And there'll be people that just decide, I can't rebuild, or I was a renter. And we're worried about the brain drain of people and talent drain of people leaving the area because there isn't enough housing.
Yeah, very good point. I'll tell you, though, we talked a lot before the cleanup began about the psychological, you know, thrust forward it would be when the debris was removed. And I can tell you, in my own community of Kenwood, you know, we're a town of 1,200 people, and we lost 130 homes in the fires. And as I walk around my neighborhood where the fires hit very hard, and it really is a remarkable psychological difference when you walk through, even over the past few days, you know, even the wattles have been replaced and there are new wattles that surround these very clean looking lots that that appear completely changed from a month ago even.
Yeah, one of the problems I'm learning that we don't talk about when the debris was removed, there was a lot of topsoil that was removed as well, some cases 3 to 6 inches, some cases 1 to 2 feet. It's going to take a lot of money and effort to bring in topsoil, have it compacted before you can even put a foundation on. And so just because you see a lot that's been cleared, it doesn't mean it's buildable ready.
Yeah, those footprints are deep. You're right. Those footprints are very deep in many locations. And I don't know what, you know, I'm sure that it costs more time and more money and more dirt and maybe more concrete to get, a flat piece of surface that you can rebuild a house on. But that
concrete might not change for the foundation, but you're right. You've got to have the lot ready to go for a new foundation, because I think most of, if not all, the foundations have been removed.
But the cleanup effort itself, the timeline really hasn't changed for that since it began with the Army Corps of Engineers. You know, they were hoping by the end of March.
What hasn't changed?
The timeline for the debris removal has really...
Yeah, with all due respect to the Army Corps and Office of Emergency Services, I kept disputing back in November when I was at town hall meetings where they said by early 2018, implying January, we're going to have it cleaned up.
Ah.
I raised my hand at one meeting and said, no, you can't. I mean, just logistically, it's going to be beyond that. And they said, nope, it's going to be early 2018. All the local contractors who've done the removal have done phenomenal work, but it just... It had delay after delay to where there's no way that could happen. So I'm glad they're going to be finishing it up.
But yeah.
I wish it had been a couple of months ago.
And let's talk about those workers, because so many, there were 700 trucks on the road at one point in debris removal cleanup. Many of those folks were local workers, and a lot of them construction workers. And I would imagine that after having steady work for 3 months, 2 or 3 months solid, that they have to be looking at their own futures, immediate futures, and wondering what's next and how soon next will be.
You know, you're right. And you've got to give them a lot of credit. All of the union train workers, others that were on sites, I saw them on Saturdays and Sundays, even on holidays, and we would have pushed it out a lot further without all of the guys that do that heavy equipment work. I think there's still going to be enough work to go around for years to come, if not in debris removal, all the general engineering, operating engineer people. Hopefully there's enough work in the rebuilding to keep them busy. They've earned it.
And we've spoken with Jennifer Gray Thompson of Rebuild North Bay, and she'll be on with us at the end of this hour, too, and talking about training programs and grants for training programs that are becoming available. You've been talking about your outreach to high school students around here and for those interested in the construction business, making options open for them, hoping that this whole effort will make an impression in terms of the number of workers available to us.
Yeah, I've talked to Jennifer, and one of their key target areas is workforce development. I'm glad. It's going to take all hands on deck to find enough workers, train enough workers, whether they're high school students that we're working with to train, or whether it's the adult education programs in construction that the Office of Education is running. It's going to take everything. In fact, you ought at some point talk to SCO and their adult education people, because they're conducting basic training in construction to get people on the job sites, and that's a new element this year that's a real positive.
And you're right about that. It's going to take every corner of possible training and all of those people to come together and make sure that whatever access we have to local workers, we can fill.
And, Pat, everybody does talk about, let's get some outside help. Well, that's great, but that issue still looms of, if we bring in companies, subcontractors, generals with their subs and workers, where are we going to put them? And I hear every day from outside companies saying, I'd love to come over with our crew and help, but where am I going to put them?
Yeah.
So it's either going to take a workers' village, or it's going to take a temp units or something that provides living space, because it's too far to commute for people around the Bay Area, even Sacramento.
Were you surprised, Keith, by the outcome of the economic outlook last Friday by Dr. Robert Eiler at SSU, who said that long term we may not see a huge downturn in local economy as a result of the fires?
No, I have such respect for Dr. Eiler that when he says something, I know it's well thought out.
Yeah.
And so I think in this case he could be right, that the tragedy creates a new revenue that comes into the area. I was in a meeting with a group yesterday, including insurance people and builders and others, and they were reminding me we could have $8 to $9 to $10 billion of insurance money that for living expenses, furnishings, rebuilding, that's going to be injected into our economy. It's a sad way to get that kind of injection, but there's going to be new outside money that comes in, and I think Dr. Eiler's right. The reinvestment of or the spending and the churn of those dollars might help our economy a little. I worry about tourism,
yeah,
because we've got to get the message out there that the whole North Bay isn't still on fire and you can come and have a great time. We've got to worry about that. I worry about small businesses near Coffee Park, who I've been hearing and reading that they're suffering because,
yes,
they lost 1,300 households that were customers. And so we do have some downsides, but I think Dr. Eiler is right. We could have a supplement to that that's injection of new money.
Yeah, and one of my favorite comments from Jennifer Gray Thompson during that economic conference was, maybe we should just pull a barge up to the coast. Or maybe it should be a cruise ship, something like that, where we could, something that's out of commission right now where there could be instantaneous housing available. You know, they've done it in disaster circumstances before.
Yeah. Brad Bollinger, publisher of the press of the North Bay Business Journal, had brought that up months ago, that bring a cruise ship in and house hundreds, if not thousands, of workers and bus them up to the area. That's been done before, I guess, either down in Florida or Houston. That idea isn't brand new, but it's been floated. It's been floated before. And you know what? We have to do anything and everything.
Yeah, it's time to get creative.
Dwelling units, trailers on properties, worker villages, boats, whatever it takes. We better get moving on it, though, because the building season will be pretty heavy, I hope, come May, June, July, August, September. Permits will be pulled. Houses will be springing up, sticks in the ground, and all that happens only if there are workers, both locally and even those coming in from outside.
Now, you were talking earlier, Keith, about being in touch with a lot of insurance folks, and a lot of us are wondering whether we were directly affected by the fires or not, whether next year at this time or in the coming few years, there are going to be insurance premium hikes for all of us to try to pay for the output of monies from the insurance companies right now.
Let me look down my list of local insurance brokers, somebody who knows what they're talking about, and I'll send you some names.
All right, very good.
It would make sense to me.
Yeah.
But talk to somebody in the industry. I'd just be making it up.
Is there anything else we should be paying attention to, Keith, at this particular point?
Yeah, knowing the powerful outreach of your in your market area, I worry about the lack of attention paid to 575 homes lost in Mendocino and 589 in Napa. I understand the focus on Sonoma County because this was the greatest loss, but like Jennifer's group is working on, so are we, that this is a regional problem, not just a Sonoma County problem. So I don't want to lose track of our concern for our friends and neighbors in surrounding counties.
That's a very important important point, Keith, and thanks for making it. And as always, thanks for being here. I always feel enlightened after our conversations.
You're the greatest, Pat. Thanks for the conversation.
All right. That's Keith Woods, head of the North Coast Builders Exchange, and he's been involved in so many conversations with so many different people trying to make headway here, and a collaborative effort obviously continually needed, and that's why folks have gotten together, you know, whether they're business leaders or they're in the construction industry. They have knowledge about how to get grant money on a federal level, all of those folks coming together to try to give us all some good advice moving forward, all the while having the community in mind.